let me ask you a question. If I say to you, top level football, you'll think of glamour, you'll think of glory, you'll almost certainly think of money. But what happens when that doesn't quite pan out? Paul Late's going to tell us a potted version of what happened to him. And in case, just for those of you, because we're talking going back quarter of a century here now, just to put this in context, two of the finest judges of footballers ever. The late, great Ken Barnes signed Paul for Manchester City. Ken signed 40 players who went on to play in the old First Division and then the Premier League, either at City or elsewhere. And he still described Paul Lakey as the jewel in his crown. And 20 years ago, when Lakey had to retire, I was with him at a do at Old Trafford and Sir Alex Ferguson turned up. We didn't know he was going to turn up, Lakey, but he did. And he said, he told a little tale. And he said, when I first came to Manchester, I used to go and watch Ken Barnes' lads. I had two, he had all the best ones. And he said, Ken had signed a lot of good lads. He'd signed a few very good lads. And he said, he'd signed one totally outstanding and exceptional footballer. And he put his hand on Paul Lake's shoulder. And that was a rare moment. But just to give a little bit of background, without wishing to blow smoke your way, Lakey, you were not destined, according to all the best judges, to be a journeyman. So when it didn't work out for you, you had a long way to fall, didn't you?
I did. That's right, Jim. You had a long way to fall. And it culminated, really, my mental health issues, if you're looking a long way back. Because back in the 80s and early 90s, it was a real culture to be the man in the football environment. There was no speaking out about any issues, about any problems. You couldn't share any emotions with anybody, other than it was always a case of Everton's fine and man up and get on with it. My story is just there. I mean, I've been at City from being 8 years of age. You know, always being a fan, been a local boy, and trying to keep my feet on the ground. Certainly my family and friends would never like that not to happen anyway, so that goes without saying. But my career was going particularly well, as you mentioned before. I worked alongside some wonderful people that nurtured my career and got my abilities to a level where I was made captain. And I'd had Manchester United, Liverpool, Tottenham, you name it, Everton. I think it was Glasgow Rangers were also in and all talking about ridiculous sums of money to come and buy me. But at that time, I had just been made captain at City and I was having a fantastic time. And I was in my pomp. I was at my most confident. I felt as though I could take on the world. I just felt like I couldn't do anything wrong and that I was in my prime, and watch me go. I used to be an apprentice and I would clean lots of different areas of the club, football boots, and go into the blue room at City, which you remember well.
Of course, yeah.
And on the scroll was all of the ex-City players and the most capped. And my dream was always to be the most capped player at City. And I saw that every single day at some point. I thought, right, my name's going to be on there one day. You watch me. And that's how I thought. I wasn't being arrogant. I was just confident in my own ability. And things were going fantastically well. And then unfortunately, I was stamped on in a game back in 1988 by a player for Bradford City, and that was the beginning of the end, unbeknownst to me. Then 2 years later, playing against Aston Villa, in front of the then England manager, Graham Taylor had come to watch Tony Daly, David Platt and myself, and the previous England manager, rest his soul, had told Graham that he should have me as a potential future England captain. These were all things that I knew before the game had started.
Yeah.
So I was 10 foot tall, and then someone stamped on my the previous injury I stamped on, it lasted two seasons where I just hung on, and then my anterior cruciate ligament ruptured, and that was the beginning of the end. What transpired then was, unfortunately, in those times, Jim, you know, there was clubs having one physiotherapist and a part-time doctor, one overseeing 40-50 players, so you're pretty much left as an injured player to your own devices. I was packed off to Lillishaw Rehabilitation Centre on my own as a young man, and I was there for 49 weeks in total. I did the most stint of any professional footballer. Other players would come and go, but I was left there, really, and I felt as though I was left there to rot. Because when you're given a programme of exercises to do and you come back to your club And then one day you're the next captain, you're the team captain, and then inside of a year, you're almost a forgotten man, the man that's asked to do little bits and pieces because other players aren't available. When you're ignored by your then chairman and by other members of staff, you know, it's pretty galling. And as a young man, not having the worldly experience that we all have at a later age, you don't know how to deal with that, and you carry that around, and that's what I did. And it basically just grew and grew and grew. And it got to the stage where not only had I had further surgery, and I was literally the forgotten man, completely and utterly the forgotten man, I was struggling psychologically and emotionally, so much so that I was actually overtraining and I wasn't sleeping. I was avoiding any social circles. I'd avoid picking the phone up, going to the shop until it was midnight. I used to walk at 2-3 in the morning and count my steps. And I was pretty much beyond tears. I'd gone past that. As far as I could see, that everything was black and there's nowhere I could turn. There's nobody I could speak to. And the actual, that basically culminated in one night. I'd been for a walk, it was 3-4 in the morning. And I was on a bridge in Cheadle over the motorway, and a police car passed me, and I was just watching the cars, one or two cars go by, and I was just contemplating just where I was, how I'd got to this stage of my life, where one moment everything was rosy in the garden, you know, I was going to be the next big thing, so to speak, and I was so excited. And I also had this dream of being able to pay off mum and dad's mortgage, my brothers, my twin sisters. I wanted to make everyone comfortable because their lives were sacrificed to give me the opportunity by my mum and dad, inadvertently, you know. So I had so much to wanted to give back. And so this night on the motorway bridge, the police passed me and came back again, and two police officers walked either side of me, and it suddenly dawned on me what they thought I was about to do, and it shot me to my very core. And I just thought, how far could I possibly fall? Because I was a shadow of myself, and I look back at that person and I don't recognize that person. But I'm not ashamed of that person, Jim, because I had mental health problems, I had depression. I didn't know how to deal with it. I didn't know what I had, why I had it, and what to do next. But it happened, and I dealt with it. I still carry depression with me now. It's something that I can manage. I manage on a daily, weekly basis. Some days we have good days and bad days. We have days where we're happy, and days where we're a bit blue. That's not depression. What I had was clinical depression.
Can I ask you, though, Lakey, because about the culture? Because I remember Bill Shankly, who was a revered football figure, but it was a well-known tale that he had nothing to do with injured players because they weren't available for the team. So that very sad tale you've just told, would you assume that would be typical across football, not just a Manchester? It wasn't just you. If you'd have been injured at Liverpool or Spurs, you'd have been telling a very similar tale.
Absolutely. The stigma that was around in those days, and it's still there a little bit today, if I'm being brutally honest. It's still there. It's abated because of the involvement of the Manchester County FA, of the Premier League, of the FA, basically that introduction to this acknowledgement, this acceptance, because we know from different stories, Robert Enke in particular, the German goalkeeper, the wonderful footballer who sadly took his own life. That's how bad it can turn. This is a life-threatening illness, which if it's not addressed properly, that is the end result. Football today has got, it's awash with wonderful players, but we know how hard it is to make it at any level, never mind the conference, but the Premier League in particular, and lots of footballers fall by the wayside. And as important, Jim, and this is where, you know, hopefully we can all be working together, is parents. It's parents' education and how they support their child. And it's going to be, as girls and women's football grows, and that hopefully one day will be as big as the men's game is, the same thing will apply. It's basically not shying away from these issues, because when you talk about depression and you deal with depression, it's not a sign of weakness, it's a sign of strength. It's about how you deal with it and how you cope with it. And because you're able to open and share and be honest about it, you find mechanisms and people there can support you. And what happens, though, Jim, as well, is when one person starts to speak about it, it then becomes accepted to do so. And other people then start to communicate around, It's not a case, and it's not a sign of weakness, and it's not showing a chink in the armour. And these are the comments that can come out from certain people. Now, coaches in football today, lots of coaches, lots of people in the workplace don't often now know how to speak about it, how to deal with it, what to say, because they're frightened of saying the wrong thing. But also, some people see that, again, unfortunately, as a sign of that person can't be trusted. I can't rely on that person because he's soft. He's got a weakness there. I can't rely on him. And that's what is the sporting environment, especially the elite environment, Jim.